Well, good morning, church. Good to see each of you here this morning. Faith and I were out last week, and so it's awesome to be back at Harvest, and so good to see all of your smiling, happy faces and worshiping together here this morning. Good to see a few that we haven't seen in a while, so welcome back to Harvest, and just it feels right when you're here, so glad that you're here. We've just come off an awesome week of camp, high school camp. In fact, if you were a part of camp in some way over this last week, teen camp, either camp staff, kids that are camp, would you just raise your hand up high so that we can see? Yeah, raise it right up high. Good, good, good. All right. We got a couple pictures. One up here. There's 105 teens that registered for camp this year. It's a great number. We got some smiles and happy faces. Just had an awesome time. So thankful to have Pastor Michael Saunders and Rebecca with us. And God used Pastor Michael's ministry of the scriptures in a powerful way this week. And so we're so glad that they're here. And junior camp is launching tomorrow morning. And I know we got a bunch of junior kids that are ready and raring to go. I'm not sure if our campers are or our counselors are, but they will be by tomorrow morning. In fact, if you're sitting by somebody that raised their hand a little bit earlier, make sure you give them an elbow every 5 minutes or so, because I don't think they slept much this last week, and they were going nonstop, and so we'll try to keep them awake. If you can help me this week, or this morning as we talk through the scriptures. I'm glad that you're here for part three in our series on lessons from the life of Joseph. And we're titling this Overcoming Life's Challenges. It's just a little five-week series that we're tracking through the weeks of the summer. This is week number three. We're actually going to miss a couple of weeks. I'm going to be out next week. I'll tell you about it in a minute. Pastor Larry's going to preach next week. And then we'll finish this up with two more messages there at the end of July. Just lessons that we're learning from the life of Joseph. Overcoming life's challenges. We've talked about how to overcome rejection. That was week number one. And then how to overcome temptation. This morning, we're in for, I think, a special treat. We're going to discover biblical answers that relate to a very powerful and practical everyday issue in your life and in my life. We're going to talk about overcoming disappointment and the power of trust or the power of hope. And then before we're done, so you can kind of look forward to those weeks here at the end of July, number four and five, we'll talk about overcoming success, the power of integrity. And then finally, we'll talk about a very destructive problem that plagues many people. I hope that you'll plan to join us for that Sunday, talking about overcoming bitterness and the power of forgiveness. And each one of these things plays out in a very specific way in the life of this man, Joseph, that so many of us are familiar with. I think it's fascinating to kind of look through it from this perspective. So I'm going to invite you to turn to Genesis chapter 39. Genesis chapter 39. Have you ever been disappointed? Go ahead and raise your hand if you've ever been disappointed. Yeah, I'm guessing probably most of us. You've been disappointed by a friend, or you've been disappointed by a family member. There's been circumstances that have happened in your life that have disappointed you. Might have felt a little bit like this limerick I read one time. It said, "The world had a hopeful beginning, but we ruined our chances by sinning. We know that the story will end to God's glory, but at present, the other side's winning." And I think sometimes we feel like that. I mean, we're trying hard, but it feels like there's a lot of mess going on in our world. And there's a good portion of Joseph's life that I think he might have felt this way too. You might remember that we left Joseph a few weeks ago in a rough spot. He had rejected the seductive advances of a beautiful, powerful woman. He had said no to temptation, and he'd run. In fact, remember we talked about this idea of kind of a quick acrostic on run. Remember your promises and understand the consequences and never play around with sin. I think that came right out of the text that we looked at in Genesis 37. And Joseph overcame the temptation. And it seems like that ought to have been awesome, and it was. And I wish that everything was kind of smooth sailing from that point on. I mean, that's kind of what we expect. He passed the test. And, you know, this big circumstance that came up in his life, he got through it and he didn't fall. And it's one of the great success stories in the Bible, in the Old Testament. But it wasn't smooth sailing after that. In fact, what really happened is that Mrs. Potiphar was mad. I mean, she'd been spurned. And she accused Joseph of, unwanted advances. And who's everybody going to believe? I mean, she's the master's wife. He's a nobody. And in fact, she had kind of the smoking gun, right? He had left. Remember, he'd left his coat with her. So she had sort of the evidence of the deed. I want you to pick up. We're going to read in chapter 39 and 19 and 20. We're going to read really a lot of chapter 40, and we'll hit a few pieces as we go through here. But let's pick up the story in verse 19. And it came to pass when Joseph's master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath, the master's wrath, was kindled. Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. Remember that little phrase. It's not inconsequential. The place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. In the following verses, we're going to see three major disappointments that take place in Joseph's life. Disappointment number one involved untrue accusations, and that's really the story that we just talked about. Potiphar's wife accused him unfairly. And just make a note of this, that you never find Joseph saying evil things about her. And I don't know if we know the whole story. I mean, we don't have every single conversation that he had in this story, but he's getting untrue accusations launched against him, but he never speaks evilly of her. Disappointment number two is unfair incarceration. That's verses 20 through 23. Not only was he falsely accused, but there was a heavy price to be paid. I mean, we just read it in verse 20. He didn't do it. But who are they going to believe? And so Joseph was put into, verse 20 tells us, he was put into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. In fact, I don't want you to misunderstand the phrase that it says, the place where the king's prisoners were bound. It's sort of like this was kind of a white-collar prison. You know, they had the prison for some people, and then he got put in kind of the good one. If you look over in chapter 40, in verse 15, right at the end, Joseph's describing what had happened, and he said, they put me into the dungeon. So the prison that was talked about in chapter 39, Joseph calls it a dungeon, and the word literally is the pit. In fact, it is the exact same word that we saw back in chapter 37, where Joseph's brothers put him into the pit. It seems like in this dungeon there might have been, you know, multiple cells, or I don't know what it looked like, but this isn't like some, you know, white-collar prison where sort of the good people were kept. He was in the dungeon. This is not a pretty picture. It's not a pleasant experience. And you know, it feels like going back to the pit. I just have to believe that Joseph's saying, I mean, I was here before. I mean, I didn't know what was happening back then. My brothers put me into this thing, and God, you kind of brought me out of it, and all these things that happened, and now I'm back here again. I'm back in the pit. I didn't think I'd ever have to be in the pit again. I mean, it's one thing to be in the pit the first time, But anybody experience this when you go back to the pit? And Joseph maybe feels abandoned. God, where are you? Why would you allow this to happen again? Fortunately, we're not left to wonder where God was. In fact, because let's keep reading in verse 21. It says, the Lord was with Joseph, and he showed him mercy even in the pit. And he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. And the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him. That which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. We got untrue accusations, we got unfair incarceration, and then disappointment number three is unfulfilled expectations. Let's keep reading chapter 40. Let's kind of see how this story plays out. And it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker had offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was wroth against two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers and against the chief of the bakers. And he put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard, into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they continued a season in ward. And they dreamed a dream, both of them, each man his dream in one night, each man according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in the prison. And Joseph came in unto them in the morning and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his lord's house, saying, wherefore look ye so sadly today? And they said unto him, we have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpretation of it. And Joseph said unto them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you. It's amazing to me that Joseph wants anything to do with dreams. I mean, that's where this whole mess started, you know, a few chapters ago. Joseph might have been saying, I kind of remember what happened the last time I did that. I was thrown in a pit and I was sold as a slave. And you'd sort of think he'd be like, not me, man. I'm off dreams forever. But that's not what happens. Instead, he says, hey, you had a dream. Tell me about it. Verses 9 through 19. I'm not going to read all of this, although we're going to come back to a few verses in a minute. But in 9 through 19, Joseph interprets the dreams of the butler and the baker. One is good news, and the other is a death sentence. He says in 3 days, the butler is going to be restored to his position. The butler's happy. And he says that the baker would be hanged. Look at verse 20. Jump down to verse 20. And it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he, Pharaoh, made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. And he restored the chief butler unto his butlership again, and he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand, but he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Exactly as Joseph has said. They told him the dreams. Joseph interpreted them exactly in this way. 3 days later, exactly what Joseph interpreted to them came to pass. You say, well, how does all of this affect Joseph? I mean, that's really what we're trying to get to. And I want to go back. Let me read verse 14 and 15. Here's how this is all affecting Joseph. He says to the butler, he says, but think on me when it shall be well with thee. Right? So when you get out of this, according to the interpretation of the dream, and things are good with you again, think on me. And show kindness, I pray you, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. He says, hey, listen, when you get out, remember. Could you kind of remember how I treated you and how I interacted with you and ultimately how, you know, the interpretation of the dream. Would you remember and just put a good word in for me with Pharaoh? And then go down to verse 23. It says, yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. I mean, how do you make this stuff up? What else is going to go wrong in this roller coaster life for Joseph? I mean, here's a guy who seems to have done and doing everything right. He's making good decisions and he's making hard decisions. He's continuing to stand up for what's right. He's continuing to do the right thing. He's filled with integrity. He sees God blessing like every step that he takes. And at every corner, it's almost like body blow after body blow, disappointment after disappointment. You ever have one of those days where just feels like everything goes wrong? I mean, you get to the end of the day and you almost have to laugh. I mean, what else? Bring it on. If everything's going wrong. And sometimes we have not just days, we have, you know, long months and weeks and sometimes even years where it sort of feels like, man, it just feels like one thing after another. I feel like I get my head above water and I catch a little bit of breath and then just something else comes along and I feel, you know, just beats me again. This is Joseph's life. Have you had some of these kinds of disappointments in life? Ever have any accusations that have been brought to you that are untrue? There are unfair circumstances that come into your life? Have you experienced unfulfilled expectations, something that you thought was going to happen and just doesn't turn out anyway like you were hoping for? And all of this adds up to disappointment. And disappointment is tough. So what are we going to do when we face these kinds of disappointments? Because you got them. I know as I'm looking across this room, I mean, at least one of these things, probably all of these at different times in our lives, we're going to face these kinds of disappointments. And what are we going to do when we come up to them? What are you going to do when you have unexpected illnesses and sidelines you right when you have other plans? What are you going to do when your friends abuse your friendship and that disappoints you? What are you going to do when your plans don't work out? What are you going to do when your marriage doesn't fulfill your expectations? What are you going to do when you lose your job that you thought you were going to have all the way up through retirement? What are you going to do when these kinds of disappointments come into your life? I want to point you this morning to two lessons that come out of Joseph's circumstances here in these verses. And I really think that if you'll get these two things, it's really going to help you as you overcome the disappointments in your life. Here's the first thing I think Joseph's story tells us, and I want you to get. Remember that God has not, nor will ever abandon you. Remember that God has not, nor will He ever abandon you. Chapter 39 and verse 21 said, but the Lord was with Joseph. He did not leave him. Even though life seemed pretty unfair, God was right there. He never left. He never left. He was with Joseph. As I was thinking through this passage this last week, I was reminded about Corrie ten Boom's story, The Hiding Place. You guys familiar with the story of Corrie ten Boom? Maybe you watched the movie. It's old now, but the story of Corrie and her sister Betsy. Corrie was imprisoned by the Nazis during World War II and faced a tremendous persecution as she and Betsy and actually her whole family were trying to help Jews escape the hands of the Gestapo. And in this story, in her story, some of her darkest days of her and her sister Betsy were in the Ravensbrück prison. It was a notorious prison for Jews and sympathizers of the Jewish people. And she wrote some memories of that experience that I think are both haunting but just so challenging about life in the prison, life in the dark days. And I want to read you just a couple paragraphs this morning in order to kind of get a little bit of a feel for the spirit and the testimony of this godly lady, Miss Ten Boom. She says, Barracks 8, this is in Ravensbrück prison. Barracks 8 was in the quarantine compound. We got a lot of people who have been in quarantine. This is not that same kind of quarantine, although that's not really good either. Barracks 8 was in the quarantine compound. Next to us, perhaps as a deliberate warning to newcomers, were located the punishment barracks. From there, all day long and often into the night, came the sounds of hell itself. They were not the sounds of anger or of any human emotion, but of a cruelty altogether detached. Blows landing in regular rhythm, screams keeping pace. We would stand in our 10-deep ranks with our hands trembling at our sides, longing to jam them against our ears to make the sounds stop. It grew harder and harder. Even within these four walls, there was too much misery, too much seemingly pointless suffering. Every day, something else failed to make sense. Something else grew too heavy. But as the rest of the world grew stranger, one thing became increasingly clear, and that was the reason the two of us, Corrie and Betsy, the two of us were here. Why others should suffer, we were not shown. But as for us, from morning until lights out, whenever we were not in ranks for roll call, our Bible was in the center of an ever-widening circle of help and hope. What a beautiful picture that is. Our Bible was in the circle of an ever-widening help and hope. Can you imagine that in the middle of a horrible prison? Like waifs clustered around a blazing fire, we gathered about it, holding out our hearts to its light and warmth. The blacker the night around us grew, the brighter and truer and more beautiful burned the Word of God. And she quotes from Romans, she says, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. Corrie ten Boom says, in the middle of the most intense suffering that you can imagine personally, but even hearing the cries of the people around us, all we knew was that nobody could separate us from the love of God. No matter how dark the night, no matter how dark the story, there was nothing that could separate us. And in that situation, because of the love of God, she says that these prison experiences were good for me, because it was in this place that God became real. Here's the truth this morning. I'm hoping, I'm praying that it burns deep into your souls this morning, because there's going to be a time in your life when you're going to need it. I promise you. And from the story of Corrie ten Boom and her sister, and from the story of Joseph in the middle of the prison and a life of multiple disappointments, I just want to tell you, above all those things, if this isn't kind of plant a flag deep in your mind, I want you to know that God will always be there with you. He will not leave you. He's never going to abandon you. Following the death of her sister, Corrie ten Boom quoted the wonderful words which were uttered by Betsy when she was close to death. She says this: "Sleet stung as we reached outside. I stepped close to the stretcher to form a shield for Betsy, and we walked past the waiting line of sick people through the door and into a large ward. They placed the stretcher, Betsy's stretcher, on the floor, and I leaned down to make out Betsy's words. You might have heard them before. This is what Betsy said. She said, 'We must tell the people what we have learned here. We must tell them. There is no pit so deep that he is not deeper still. They will listen to us, Corrie, because we've been here. There is no pit so deep that he is not deeper still.'" It's pretty heavy, I know. I want you to know that it applies to your disappointments. The big ones. I'm guessing that there's people here that you're in the middle of some really big kind of life-shaking disappointments. There's no pit that he's not deeper still. And there's maybe the rest that, I wouldn't say I'm in a life-shaking disappointment, but we have disappointments day by day, and things that just don't settle right, things that don't go according to our plans. And I just want to bring you this morning before the story of Joseph and before God's word that says God is with you even in those small disappointments. He wants to walk with you through them. He wants to teach you. He wants to guide you. God has not, nor will he ever abandon you. Here's the second thing that I think will help you overcome disappointments in your life, and is this: choose to trust God regardless of the circumstances. And if you could put a big circle around that trust word, that hope, I mean, I think that's the connection that we're talking about. It's the big picture. Choose to trust, choose to hope. It seems to me that there's three big lessons that God was trying to teach Joseph about trust, and I want you to see them. Lesson number one was about contentment that I think just shines its way through Joseph's story. The most amazing thing to me about this scene is that you have no indication of a pity party. Did you see it? Not even a little one. And I don't know what was happening when Joseph was on his own. At night, nobody else was around. I don't know. It seems like it's almost impossible for us not to feel a little bit sorry for ourselves. And he had some really hard things coming his way, but we don't hear about it. And instead, listen to this. Verse 6, we read it earlier. Joseph came in unto them in the morning and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. Who was sad? Well, the butler and the baker, not the candlestick maker, but the butler and the baker were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his Lord's house, saying, "Why are you guys so sad?" I mean, it just makes me smile. Joseph's story was much worse than theirs. I mean, I think almost all of us would be like, "What in the world are you guys frowning about? You think you got problems? Get a load of my story." It's not Joseph. He wasn't sitting in a corner feeling sorry for himself. He was serving other people. He was listening to them and their stories. He was sensing their needs. Did you ever notice this? Did you know, I know this for me, that the more that I think about myself, the less I think about other people. And vice versa. Anybody else like that? You don't have to raise your hand. The more that I think about myself, man, the less I think about other people. And I want to just tell you this morning that the best counsel that I can give you if you're discouraged or in the moments that you're discouraged is just get involved in others' lives. Get your focus off yourself. I'm not saying that there's not struggles that you're going through. I'm not saying that they're not important. I'm just saying it will help you if you can get your focus off yourself and get your focus onto others. And it seems like this is what Joseph's doing. He had to learn this lesson about contentment. Lesson number two was about patience. This is amazing to me. We read verse 23 before, the end of chapter 40. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. Look down at chapter 41 in verse 1. And it came to pass at the end of two full years. Writer wants to make sure we know this. Two full years. Two long, monotonous, miserable years. I mean, I got to imagine that when the butler got out of prison, he must have thought, man, any day now, the next day, he's going to be so grateful for the help that I gave him. I mean, the next day, he woke up and he started packing up his stuff because they're going to come get me. And he waits all day and they don't come. So he disappointed, goes to sleep that night. And the next morning he gets up and he packs up all his stuff and he's got it ready to go because they're going to come get me. And day after day after day and week after week and month after month for two full years. That's a long time. 2 years is a long time even when you know it's going to be 2 years. It's a really long time when you think every day I'm waiting so that I get the word because he's going to remember and I'm going to get out of here. You talk about humanly wasted time. I mean, here was such a gifted young man. Everything that he touched, it felt like God blessed. What is he doing? Get stuck here in this place. There was so much more that he could do out there. But listen, all of this time, in two long years, God was building into his character this lesson of patience. I love how James said it in the book at the end of the New Testament, James chapter 1, verses 2 and 3 and 4. You remember this. He says, trials and delays and disappointments produce what? Patience. Trials produce patience, and patience produces maturity. Listen, until we learn the lesson of patience, there can be no maturity. They're connected. There's no spiritual maturity that happens in our lives aside from learning these lessons of patience. And we won't learn patience until we go through the waiting process. Everybody's got to do it. Nobody likes it. Nobody likes the waiting room, whether it's in the doctor's office or it's in the waiting room of life. Nobody likes the waiting room. But listen, what James says is you're going to have to go through the waiting room because the waiting room is going to produce patience, and patience is going to lead to maturity, and that's what God wants for your life. Lesson number three was about providence. Now, I want you to get this. I want to stop for a minute on this idea of providence. Providence is a powerful Bible truth that we have to understand. We got to put it in our tool bag of understanding. Providence means this. It means that God is in control of our lives. Nothing happens by accident. Listen, it was not an accident that Joseph found himself in this prison. He could have wasted all the time that he wanted blaming God and fussing about Potiphar's wife. I mean, if Potiphar's wife hadn't done this, he wouldn't be in this situation. Everything was going good. But it seems like Joseph understood something. He wasn't in that prison because of the lies of some seductive woman. He was there because it was God's will for him to be there. And you may be blaming God right now for some of the circumstances that you have. And you might be blaming other people for the disappointments in your life and for the position that you're at today. But I want to encourage you this morning to see that God's will is active in your circumstances. I promise you it is. And we're just getting the first taste of it here in this chapter. And we're going to see it even more so in the coming chapters. But it is clear how God is taking this whole situation, which is such a mess from Joseph's perspective. I mean, in this pit, as he's trying to figure out what it is, I mean, there is no reason for this. It's only confusing. It is a mess. But God is in the process of orchestrating it all together for an incredible purpose. Listen, there are no accidents in your life. There are no coincidences. There are only divine appointments. Whatever's going on in your life, the good, the bad, and the ugly, according to Romans 8:28, God is in charge of all of this. Matthew chapter 10 and verse 29 says that two sparrows are sold for a cent, and God knows even when a sparrow falls to the ground. He has planned it. Listen, if it is in God's plan, God's will, when a sparrow falls to the ground, Christian, don't you think that it's the circumstances of your life are in His care and under His will? Nothing happens by accident. Everything occurs for a purpose. The fact that you're here today in this room and in this place is not some series of coincidences. This is a result of God's work in your life, God's hand. There is a purpose. There is a reason for you to be here this morning. We call this providence. Providence, by the way, there's a difference between providence and fatalism. And whether you care about the words or not, I want you to know about the concepts. Providence is different than fatalism. Fatalism says, hey, whatever happens, happens. There's nothing that you can do about it. Someone said, I'm not a fatalist, and even if I were, what could I do about it? All right, that's not it. I served on a jury almost 20 years ago now. The jury was, there was a trial for somebody who was accused of vehicular homicide. The story was a man had left the stock car races in a community a little ways away from us. And as he's leaving the stock car races, he found out he had a flat tire, got out just on the shoulder of the road, just, you know, a couple hundred yards from the exit of the stock car race yard. And he got out, he's changing the tire on his vehicle when someone that was traveling along the highway swerved over and hit him and killed him. And the trial was for this man that was driving the second car that killed the man beside the road. This vehicular homicide was what he was charged with. But I remember this, the defense attorney, as they were selecting the jury, asked this question. He asked the question, he said, do you believe in fate? And what he wanted to know, what he was actually prepping the jury for, was the idea that, you know, some things just happen by fate. This guy got out, he had a flat tire, he was beside the road. My client was, you know, driving along, he just happened to swerve, hit him. It's terrible what happened, but some things are just a matter of fate. Are we going to put somebody in prison just because this is a matter of fate? There's nothing you could do about it. You know, some Christians practice sort of a type of spiritual fatalism. Listen, fatalism is different than God's providence. Fatalism says, hey, God's going to do what God's going to do. It doesn't really matter how we see things. Just God's going to do what God's going to do. You ever thought maybe something like that? This is not the biblical perspective of God's providence. It is a far cry from understanding that we have a loving God who has a personal interest in us, and He has a plan for our lives, and He has a purpose for our trials. That's very different. So we, as believers, as Christians, we accept that we cannot change things because we know that God loves us and He has a plan for us. This is called providence. Why do we talk about providence? We talk about providence because it is the theological foundation for trust, for faith. If you're going to be a Christian who trusts God in the good and the bad times of your life, then you're going to have to understand, in concept at least, you're going to have to understand the idea of God's providence, that He is a good God, and He is a loving and a wise Father, and because I can trust that He is too good to be unkind, and He's too wise to be mistaken, I can trust that whatever God brings into my life, it is for my good, and I can trust Him in it. All right, so focus in here. We're going to be done just in 1 minute. Has God allowed some disappointments in your life? Some setbacks, some discouragements. Maybe you've had some stop signs. You felt like life was kind of cruising along, and all of a sudden it came to a screeching stop, and you're not sure where you're going from this intersection. Have you had some people that have hurt you? Some friends that have disappointed you? Maybe they've abandoned you? Have you had some circumstances that have stopped you in your tracks, and you said, you know, God, that's not my plan. I don't understand this. First of all, let me just encourage you that God has not, nor will He ever abandon you. There may be some here this morning that just really need that truth, and I hope it'll just settle down deep in your soul. He is with you. Second, I want to tell you that you really only have two options about what you're going to do with your disappointments. There's just two. You're either going to get angry and bitter at people and at the circumstances and ultimately at God. By the way, those things go together. Don't try to separate them. I've never met anybody who is truly disillusioned with people in their life and also not disillusioned with God, because we know inherently that God made those people in our lives. They come together. So you're either going to face your disappointments and get angry and get bitter, or you're going to have to choose to trust God and trust His providence, His providence, His love for you that expresses itself daily in your life.